Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. Good morning, sir. I got to be honest with you. I'm still kind of floating around a little bit. I'm a little high on that last interview we had. Tell them who we had in the last show.
Coach Bill Curry. He was the former coach from Georgia Tech and Alabama. He played football in the first Super Bowl. A starting center for the Green Bay Packers.
He does not look like a center to me, but I guess things were different
back in the day. They were littler then.
But what a genuinely nice guy, and just a rare combination of celebrity and substance that we don't always see, right?
Correct.
So that was a lot of fun. But we're going to have a lot of fun in this segment. This is Atlanta Tech Village special that we do periodically, right?
That's right.
All right, so let's get Karen Houghton on the mic. Karen, what's going on at Atlanta Tech Village?
Hey, guys. Good to be back. We have a lot of new and exciting things. Our plans for our renovation are final. And so we hope to finally start a lot of the construction in September. And we're going to have a whole new space getting ready to go in January.
Now, the thing we care about the most is the coffee. How is that?
Yeah, how's that coming?
That's an important aspect of the village. And we are serving Octane coffee, fairly traded, freshly roasted. And our coffee shop will be phase one of our reconstruction.
Of course, phase
so it'll be
one.
In the lobby. Yep.
Now, have you stopped allowing people to come in there, or do you filled up?
Our private offices have been full for quite a while. We do have about 267 members currently, even though our space isn't even really renovated. And so it's been quite a ride. So we're starting to take reservations moving forward. We do have opportunities for reserve desk and hot desk memberships currently, and then we'll probably start closing those down even in September and then open everything up back again in January.
So what are the rules right now? Like if Lee and I just want to come by and hang out or visit with some folks at the village, is there some kind of open office hours where you can hang out a little bit, or you have to rent space, or how's that work?
Well, I know the two of you, so I could probably hook y'all up. But yeah, we do have a daily membership that you can just go online at AtlantaTechVillage.com and apply for a daily membership. It's $35, and we just come greet you, walk you around the space, let you know where to sit and what you can do. Other than that, we have the hot desk memberships that are available at $300 a month, and that gives you access 24/7 to the building. So we have lots of different events going on and meetups and Atlanta Startup Village that is open to the public, and anyone can come to those. So different meetups are available online as well at our event page, and then the daily memberships. Other than that, you probably need to start a membership.
Now, on the meetups, are they all for a fee, or some of them are no charge?
Most of them are free. I would probably say about 95% of our events are free of charge. So we do have some coding fairs and different things like that that require a price, but
right.
That's it.
Now, what's an example of some of the other events you got going on, like maybe in the coming weeks?
Gosh, we've had lots of crowdsourcing events talking about raising different money all the way to your personal finances, coding, meetups we do a mobile city meetup as well that some of our ladies here from Elevate actually host as well. So mm-hmm. It's a wide variety, anywhere from, you know, cloud storage, the best way to source data, just across the board.
Now, I know one of the objectives for Atlanta Tech Village is this collaboration and this kind of serendipity. Have you had some opportunities where you've seen some of that serendipity, where maybe people have, you know, mashed up their companies? Maybe they started as individual companies and they've kind of joined forces together.
I think there's always a lot of really neat interaction happening. And I think it can happen over coffee. It can happen over a meetup, one of our community lunches every Friday at noon. A lot of that happens, and it can be triggering ideas. We have folks who are writing code and maybe they get stuck and they can turn around and ask somebody else. So I don't know that I've seen a company quite yet be kind of born from the folks there, but I think there's often a lot of sharing of resources and ideas and leads and things like that.
All right, let's talk to some villagers. How about introducing our first couple of guests for us?
Awesome. These ladies really help our gender ratio in the village. We have Sandra and Melissa from Elevate Staffing.
Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So Elevate Staffing, give us a little bit of a picture. What are you doing? Who are you doing it for?
Yeah, we're a boutique IT staffing firm. We will focus on anything in IT, but predominantly our niche space is development. And being at the Village has been such a rewarding experience for us. Just learning from different entrepreneurs in the organization, collaborating with all the, you know, latest and greatest technologists in town. We also support some of the current clients in the Village with their needs from a resource standpoint, which is, this market's a challenging market. So I think we've been very helpful to some. But it's been great being in the Village.
How do you recruit for a group that has like zero unemployment?
Like, yeah.
Is that what's going on? Is that why it's so challenging?
Yes. There's less than 1% unemployment rate right now in Atlanta IT. I think what it goes down to is just the mission, goal, and vision of the company we're searching for. Mm-hmm. So we are doing a much passive search these days. And it's convincing people that there's other great opportunities out there. It's also encouraging people from surrounding towns like Alabama, Tennessee, places like that to move to Atlanta as well for great opportunity. We've had some luck with that. But it's just, you know, and I've been doing it for several years in the Atlanta market, so really reaching out to my network and working that avenue.
Now, how does a person make themselves visible so you find them?
I think, go ahead.
I'll take that. There's many different ways they can make themselves visible. But certainly in this market, especially what we're particularly focused on is the development niche.
Right.
So they try not to make themselves visible. And if they do, they're on Dice or Monster, they're on it for 4 hours. They're getting hit 30, 40 phone calls and they take it down. So we have plenty of examples of, you know, working with candidates that we have worked with in the past that, you know, Melissa may have some long-term relationships where those folks would not ordinarily be on the boards or even, you know, very active on LinkedIn. And you've just got to get creative with finding those candidates out there. It's a very, very passive search for them. And we have to, you know, it's about the quality of the job. I think what most people realize that when they're ready to look, the reasons for them leaving is not what we're used to thinking. They're not necessarily leaving because of salary. They're leaving because of management. Maybe, you know, they're not getting along with their manager, or they're stagnant where they're at. Salary is always comes third ranked in the polls for why people leave and what people do look for. So that's when we want to get those passive candidates that are, you know, kind of in that transitionary period where they're, you know, somewhat unhappy but not clearly unhappy at that point. And that's where you can entice them to move over.
And now from an employer standpoint, what are some of the things they can be offering to woo them? What are some of the kind
espresso
of perks?
Machine.
The espresso, yeah. Scooters at the Atlanta Tech Village.
Now, is there any kind of benefit that's a hot benefit now that people are looking for?
I think flexibility, telecommute, remote work, or having more of a collaborative type open environment. People don't necessarily like the dark room, siloed cubes anymore. I think you're getting into that more progressive type environment. Working with progressive technologies is enticing. But really flexibility. You see a lot of people really want with internet and everything cloud and all of that, people want to work from home a lot or have the option. We all know the Atlanta commute can be difficult and challenging for most. So the more flexible you are, I think the more enticing that can be.
Now, when an employer is okay with telecommuting, once they've kind of in their mind made that leap, then isn't it an easy leap to say, well, then my person can be anywhere in the world now, right? Doesn't that broaden the place where the employee can be?
Yes, and that's one of the things we're trying to work with our clients because of the shortage in Atlanta is trying to entice them to look outside the Atlanta market. But still, people like that touch point. And even if they're working from home, I think managers are still more comfortable if they're
like seeing them occasionally.
Right. So
like if they lived in Europe, it could be harder.
Yes, and the time zone might be a challenge too, but...
But isn't this an incredibly competitive arena? There are a lot of IT firms, staffing firms out there, right? Recruiting firms out there. How do you go about differentiating yourself? How do you get to have this conversation with someone that might write you a check to hire some IT people?
Right, absolutely. I think there are a ton of firms in Atlanta. I think even more so in Atlanta than probably any other city in the United States. There's an upwards number of 300 plus firms that do what we do.
300
IT recruiting firms in Atlanta.
So I think there's a unique challenge that we have with that. Melissa and I, as we started Elevate, was to create something different and unique based on our relationships with our clients, knowing that, understanding their environment very intimately and understanding the candidate situation. Where we, if we feel along the way during the recruiting process that the candidate, this is really not ultimately the best fit for them, then we advise them. We're here to advise people because we do it every single day and every situation is so very unique. As we grow, there's a lot larger companies that do commoditize our business. So again, it's going back to differentiate. It's not just about a numbers thing, but it's about the quality that we can produce for our clients.
And then your client is the company, but also kind of the developer is also a client too, right? Because you got to be nice to both sides of the equation.
Yes.
And that, I guess, the relationship-driven, the model of being more relationship-driven really helps that side of it, right? Because then they trust you that you're really looking out to kind of find the right fit. So if you're going to, if you're going to call them about an opportunity, in their heads they know that this is probably in the ballpark of a fit because they know me personally.
Yes, and just like we advise our clients, the best resources for potential candidates are through your network, through referrals. So we highly encourage our companies to go through their own network, and then when they've exhausted those resources, to come to us. We very heavily leverage our network of candidates out there because, again, that opportunity may not be a fit for them, but they may know somebody. Again, the traditional methods, the Monsters, the LinkedIns, are really not where the candidates are at. It's going through social media platforms. It's tweeting it out. It's going around the traditional systems to find those candidates and entice them.
Is that why you guys do the meetup?
Absolutely. One of the reasons why we do the meetup, it's just so very important to be able to extend, educational learning to the community. It's great for the village. It's, great for our candidates, great for our consultants that are working out at our clients. Mm-hmm. It's also a good avenue for us to then tell our clients, hey, look, we've got this Mobile City meetup group. And, right now they're working on a 7-week Android session. And in the fall, they're going to go back to iOS. And, again, maybe our company's environment is looking for Android, for their folks to learn Android. Well, they'll be able to do that through Mobile City Meetup.
So why build your own company? Why not both of you just go get employed at an established firm, get a nice, good, solid, relatively steady check? What compelled you guys to make the leap?
Well, we did that. And then we were ready to do it on our own. I think, I came from a long history of entrepreneurs in my family, and I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I knew at some point in my career that I would take the leap. And it's been the most rewarding experience I've been through in my life. I feel like I've gone through an MBA program in 6 months. But part of the reason of wanting to do it on my own was I really wanted to do it differently. I worked at a couple different firms. They were great. They all have great reputations, but I had some views and thoughts that I wanted to do differently, and so I thought it was time to start my own and go for it.
So how did you guys decide to work together?
We met serendipitously through a connection, and she came strong on the client side, and I came strong on the recruiter or the candidate side, and it seemed like a perfect mix.
So how's it been?
It's been good.
It's been great. We're celebrating our year anniversary
coming
up in August.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah.
So I got to find out, what are some of the go-to questions that all of us should ask, even if we're not hiring for IT? Maybe we're hiring for someone to work here in the studio or someone to support our booking efforts to book good quality guests. I always struggle with that. I know I want to. I said this to the coach in the interview this morning. I know I want people of character and integrity. I'm looking for certain degrees of competence. And the one thing I'm definitely trying to avoid is apathy. I'll take incompetence over apathy any day. I'll try to work with incompetence. I don't know what to ask, and I'm so quick to believe whatever people tell me. You got a couple go-to moves for us or questions?
Absolutely. I think some people, a lot of interviewers kind of default back to the typical questions. You know, how long you've been how long have you been in this role? Why are you decide to leave? But it's much more about the how and why. How did you get to where you are? You know, how did you accomplish that? Certainly there are things much more important that are behind you to scratch the surface, or what we like to call peel the onion, in order to get there. So you have to ask several surface layer questions to get to the real questions. And those what we also call that performance-based questions. You know, if you were to get a job, you know, how would you go about solving this particular problem? Again, you're hiring somebody because you have a problem to begin with.
Right.
And that's what you want them to solve. And again, they may not know your environment very intimately, but it's their thought process behind answering that question is what you're going to want to pick up on.
How do you figure out if the candidate really did the stuff they said they did? Like a lot of people take credit for things. Maybe they're part of the team, but you don't know how, you know, what their role on the team was.
Right. We deal with that daily. I think you really, again, it goes back to peeling the onion. It's asking the question several different ways and getting
like to see if there's any incongruities.
Yes. So there's that. And being that we focus heavily on development, there's oftentimes a developer will work within a team setting
right.
and say he's
and maybe
done.
They're the guy that brought the coffee.
Right. You know? Exactly. So we have to really, kind of edge that out throughout our questions. And I think the longer and the more you do it, you kind of can tell if somebody really
like
knows.
Like who's for real and who right. maybe not so much.
Right. And then, you know, it's also when we check references, checking references are always huge. I would highly recommend.
So you really do that? Even
yes,
though,
we really
I don't think
do
everybody
that.
Does that.
I don't either.
No, they don't. And that's the biggest mistake you can make in really netting out those references. And when you ask them, what did they work on within that group and what was their part and what were their accomplishments? You know, you've got to dig deep with the reference calls as well.
So in your own recruiting, do you look like for ex-law enforcement or something?
No, but you know, I always wanted to be a detective, and I think part of that comes into this.
So now, at Tech Village, now, how did you choose to be there out of all the places you could have chosen?
Oh, I think we were knocking on the door second day of opening. I am lucky and fortunate to have some friends, Craig with Rigor, who you'll be talking to shortly, and Kyle with SalesLoft, who had kind of let me know the details of the Village coming up. But I knew, being a new entrepreneur, I knew I wanted to be in an environment that fostered community and learning from each other. And like Karen said, they have so many different great meetups and events going on throughout the week that just teaches new entrepreneurs like how to extend equity to a team and how it's like all kinds of different things. And I knew that we would grow so much from being in an environment like that versus just getting office space in a random building.
Now, what was something being there that surprised you that you didn't think that maybe would occur that's occurred?
I think it was
anything?
The scooters.
The scooters?
That surprised me when I went out to visit.
Other than our first recruiter on our first day, we weren't quite prepared because they decided to demo that weekend. And though we knew that was going to happen, I don't think we knew the sheer volume of the change. So that was kind of fun. I saw her heard her heels click on the ground towards him, freaking out, afraid that she's going to turn around and leave us.
Yeah, it was right out of, she was like, was this a Craigslist listing, because like things were hanging from the ceilings, the lights were
right.
like falling out there, you know, the plaster was all the walls were gone. She was like, what's going on?
What did
on?
I get myself into? Right. It's like a horror movie.
Yeah. That was literally the very first demo
yeah.
that we did.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
But it is a different environment, right? If someone is used to a traditional environment, then they may not belong at the Tech Village. I mean,
no,
it's a certain type,
it's
right?
a fit, right?
It is a certain fit. I had to go buy a new wardrobe. I felt very uncool. I needed my skinny jeans and my little tank top. But I think, too, our candidates love coming to see us because it's so casual. And we'll just meet with them and sit with them and talk to them on a couch versus a closed-in little office
like
room that they're so used
right.
to.
Yeah.
And that's just so great. So our candidates love it. Our clients beg us to come check out the Village all the time, which is so
yeah,
great for us.
And that's unusual in
yeah.
this business.
Yeah, to get clients to come want to
like,
see
please,
us
can
is
I
huge.
See you? Right. That's half the battle.
Right.
It's interesting. And the common thing that a lot of people say after they experience the village, this is without not even prepping them for it, but they're like, there's a certain energy here that's very exciting. There's, you know, you could just feel it as you walk through the building.
Right.
You know, and it's.
And it's in its infancy. Nice, I mean, imagine when
that,
it gets
right.
full grown.
That's exciting.
I think it's just going to grow and get better. And I think even just listening to Melissa and Sandra talk, you know that they're a good fit for us. And when you talk about there are 300 IT staffing firms just in Atlanta, the village has one.
Right.
And we do have an 80-20 rule where you have 80% of our companies are tech startups. But then we allow 20% to be for tech service providers, and that's what Elevate is. And so they are in that 20% category, but they're our only staffing firm, and it's because they were such a great culture fit.
Mm-hmm.
They're really good at what they do, and they're relationally based. So I think people kind of self-select out when they know, and them just being a startup themselves and being so in line with our four core values, you know, being nice, paying it forward, working hard, playing hard, and dreaming big, I think it was a perfect fit.
So, Melissa, Sandra, what can we do to help? Do you want more candidates? You want more clients?
Yeah. We give want us Java.
More coffee? What do you want?
You want
Java?
We're going to have Kevin learn Java. Would that be
yes,
helpful?
That will be extremely helpful.
Did you
come to a Mobile City meetup group.
Yeah.
Did you see Kevin's eyes light up when
yeah.
he mentioned something about sharing equity or something with
yeah.
the team? I mean, he almost fell over the microphone.
Yeah.
So what's the best way for our listeners, some of whom may very well be prospective Java or prospective clients, what's the best way for them to reach out and have a conversation?
I think the best way is just to give us a chance. I mean, you know, log on to Twitter, you know, follow us. You know, we're, our email or our Twitter handle account is Elevate Staffing, and then Melissa's Elevate Melissa. And Elevate Sandra, you know, you can see the activity that we have over there. You know, allow us to have a conversation and you'll feel the difference.
And the website is Elevate, it's Elev, the number 8, staffing.com.
Yep. With the 8, the
with
lucky
the
8. Yep.
Well, it's been an absolute delight having you here. We got to have you back sometime, maybe with some more of your team, maybe with some
yeah.
of those clients, maybe with a candidate. And I don't know, maybe we put together kind of a special segment just
yeah,
focused
just on
recruiting. On IT. So, you are genuinely welcome back, and I'm looking forward to that conversation.
Thank you
Thanks
so
much.
Much. Thank you so much.
So, Karen, I got to ask you as we wait to visit with our next set of guests, sum it up for us. What makes a good villager? You talked a little bit
you
about
talked about those
values.
Core values.
Yeah.
Why don't you go over them
speak
and
them
talk about the importance of those?
Sure. I mentioned them just a minute ago, but we do have four core values, and that is be nice, dream big, work hard, play hard, and pay it forward. And they're really simple, and you wouldn't think that that would probably influence folks as much as it does, but it really is about creating this core community where people are like-minded. So we don't want everyone to be the same. We've got all sorts of companies and demographics, but if you can be, you know, on par with those items and know that you're going to be working in, you know, a high-density space, but you know that person is going to be nice. You know that there are going to be these great opportunities to pay it forward with hours or just sharing wisdom or experience or advice or even just a listening ear or a ping pong buddy.
Right.
I think all of those kind of contribute to that. And we definitely meet everyone before they are a member in the village. So you can't just sign
it's
up
like
and
a
become
condo
a member.
Board.
I hope we're a lot cooler than that.
Now, the ping pong thing, was that metaphor, analogy, or do you actually have a ping pong table?
Oh, yeah, we got ping pong.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Ping pong, shuffleboard. And a lot of it is, you know, sometimes folks who are not used to that environment walk in and say, well, how do you get work done in here?
And they say that around here a lot.
And people work really hard all the time.
Sure.
Around the clock you can go in. And it's more about creating an environment where you can be comfortable and you can take a break and build community with somebody and then go right back into that. So it's just creating a platform for really cool interactions like that. And the easiest way to know if someone's a good fit is just to meet them. So we often have tours on Thursdays at 2:00, and you can sign up for any of those. And just coming on that tour allows you to be a part of the vision and the community and hear what we're all about. And that also gives us a face-to-face meeting with you just to get a chance to meet you and talk about what you're doing and see if you're a good fit.
How do you encourage the collaboration? Like, I know you do these events, but there's some social events as well, right?
There are, yes. One of our biggest ones is Startup Chowdown, and that is our lunch that we do. It's a big community lunch every Friday at noon, and it's free for every member, and then they get to bring a free guest, so they can bring family members, kids are free, they can bring investors, colleagues, clients. And then it's also open up to anybody in the community. So anybody in Atlanta who has interest in the startup community, the tech community, just want to see what the village is all about, they can go online and buy a ticket for $10. And when we first started, you know, it was a bit smaller. And we are
now
averaging...
Now it's getting crazy?
Yeah, it's about 175 to 200 people every Friday.
At noon, they all get in line?
Yes. We had Jim and Nick's barbecue this past Friday, and the line was literally wrapped all the way around the hallway in the building. So.
And where do they eat? You have just a free-for-all wherever you find a space?
We have an event space, a temporary event space on the fifth floor of our building, and everyone just comes up and checks in and eats, and you get to meet a lot of really neat people. It's great for networking. It's great for building friendships and just kind of breaking bread together.
And it's different food every Friday?
It is. It's different food. We always tweet about what it's going to be, and we have different sponsors, and sometimes those are followed up by lunch and learns. Kevin Sandlin will probably share. We have a new startup pitch kind of event that's going to be happening right after a group that he started where people can practice their pitches as well. So it's kind of a neat thing that you can lead into and have different learning opportunities as well as lunch.
Color me there. Kevin's going to hook me up, I think. Yeah? You're going to hook me up? So I'm getting the nod. So you have two more that made the cut and presumably are good villagers. Let's talk to them.
These guys are great villagers, and they are tech startups, and they're in different phases of their companies, so it should be really interesting. But we have Kevin with Deduct More and Craig with Rigor.
Welcome to the show, gentlemen. So we'll start with you, Kevin, because I want to find out about Deduct More. That's a very interesting name. Tell me a little bit more about it. I know I'm looking at one and talking to the other. So tell me about Deduct More. What's it about?
Deduct More is about being self-employed and hating to do taxes because you have to keep up with all your receipts all year.
So you should just not do them.
Yeah, you can try not doing them, but certain agencies that with three letters don't like that. So I felt that pain. I've been self-employed a number of times, and I had that pain. I had that problem, and I decided that I would make something that would alleviate that problem. And so Deduct More allows you to take a picture of your receipt, and it submits it to our servers, and we get the data off of that and send you a receipt and store your – we send you a report and store your receipts forever. So you don't have to keep that shoebox in your house anymore.
So this is primarily geared to the freelancer, solopreneur – The one-person business person?
Exactly. You're a self-employed individual, you're a freelancer, you're a contract employee.
Mm-hmm. And you got audited one day and decided, boy, you're going to
do
that?
What kind of scar tissue
was that?
What was
the real trigger, man? I got to know.
You know, I've never been audited. Now that we just said never, here we go. Yeah. So, no, it was just a matter of I've had this pile of receipts. It's never ending when you're self-employed. Every time you walk out the door, you incur two or three or four receipts.
Yeah.
And keeping up with them and remembering what they were. And then, you know, because the IRS is kind of picky like that. If you don't have a receipt, it didn't happen. So if you have a copy of a receipt and it's written on there, you know, lunch with Karen and Craig to discuss this, then you're good.
Then you're good.
But the picture of that works just as well. And but why throw it in a shoebox where it'll fade and who knows what can happen to it? And we take the data. You don't have to enter it into a spreadsheet or enter it into your anything manually. We'll do that for you.
What about things like mileage and, you know, the things that you got to keep track of? Do you guys have a service for that as well?
Not yet. That is on our product roadmap, as we believe we've figured out a very, very simple way to keep track of your mileage. Because from the accountants I've spoken to lately, the IRS is really starting to crack down on mileage because that's a big kind
no
of
more
fluff
going back
area.
And faking the log anymore with three different color pens.
That's exactly right.
This is purely hypothetical, guys, if anybody's listening.
Asking for a friend.
So, but it's taking a picture with your phone, or there's a gizmo, or what?
Yeah, with your smartphone, your Android or iOS.
You
take a picture of your receipt, and you hit go, and boom, you're done.
And you're hanging on to it, which I suspect could expand to hanging on to other images down the road too, huh?
In fact, through the serendipity of the village, there has already been – the business isn't born yet, but boy, is it aching to get out for a totally a different application of exactly the same technology.
So now how much is the service?
$7 a month or $59 a year.
That's it? And that's unlimited receipts?
Unlimited receipts to capture, store, and download. and then you get a report every month, every quarter, and every year. Or if you want to run a custom report for a certain project that you did that spanned, you know, 2 months or 3 weeks or whatever, you can run that report via our website.
Now, how do you translate the image into a report form?
There's a thing out there. I don't know if I'd call it a technology. It is a new service that's relatively new called Human OCR, crowdsourcing. So basically, you get a receipt, and just so you know, there's no personally identifiable information on receipts. So it doesn't matter who sees a receipt. There's no more credit card information on that. That law took care of that a couple of years ago.
Right.
So when the receipt comes over, we crowdsource that. We do human OCR. Someone actually looks at it, reads the vendor, the date, the location, every item, and its cost, tax, total.
And then they type it. Somebody physically types it
They're
into something.
They're typing it into the database from which your reports will be generated. And they'll also assign it a tax or IRS-driven category.
But this is crowdsourced, so this is opportunity for people to make money independently part-time out in the world? Is that, am I hearing that right?
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily...
We're creating jobs.
You are creating jobs. There's not necessarily a person in a corner office at your facility.
No, definitely not.
There are people out there that can and should be taking the time to help earn money for their family, and they take the time to translate the stuff.
That's correct.
That is really cool.
Now, how do you handle the quality control?
When something is inaccurate, there's a notification process. You know, if we don't know if it's inaccurate unless we went through and looked at every one. But right. If a user, for example, if you were looking on a website and you say, you know, that's not right, and you can correct it, it sends a notification back to us, and it goes in our statistics and say, you know, hopefully we're 99.9% accurate.
Right.
But there's always going to be tiny mistakes.
And are you finding that there's a sweet spot, a vertical even maybe that you've bumped into that says, wow, this is the shiznit or a certain level or what?
You know, there's about a dozen different what we would call tribes of people. You have your construction professionals, folks who do remodeling for a home or what have you. You have your healthcare employees. You have your contract employees who are in IT. And there's about a dozen of those. And every one of those has its own different set of needs and own different set of expenses that they incur constantly. Nonstop. So it's not just one sweet spot, but you know, there's 10.6 million of these people in the United States, and they're not all the same. In fact, they're all completely different. The one thing they have in common is they have to keep all those receipts.
Right, but they all have different idiosyncrasies about how they deal with this.
That's correct. Everybody has a, you know, whether they use the orange 5 gallon bucket from Home Depot,
right?
Or and that's actually, I'm not making that up. Or if they use a nice folder and they, you know, they enter it into Excel immediately. You have your people from both ends.
Do you
the
find
country.
It's more like artsy people? Like probably freelance CPAs don't need this, right? Because they're already anal about this kind of stuff.
Well, it's interesting you would ask that, but the CPA, the tax preparer, is the other person for whom this pain is.
Right, they're probably a good referral source.
That's
for you.
That's right. They hate the shoebox client.
Right.
And we are addressing the shoebox client, and part of our marketing strategy will be to go with these accountants at tax time and say, you know what, you're a shoebox client today, don't be next year.
Right.
That's fantastic. My CPA would love to talk to you, I'm sure.
Well, send him on over.
I don't have an orange bucket, but I have a little...
shoebox.
No, it's a gift bag. It's gift a red. Bag.
Even better. Does it have the pull string at the
yes,
top to keep everything
it's
in?
It's three Christmases old, and right. It's made it through three tax seasons. And I mean, they would love to, they would pay the $59 right. to you for me and not recharge me. That's it. They would be all
the,
over.
The pull string is for security.
Exactly. That way it doesn't fall out when the dog knocks it over. So I want you to hang with us because I want you to be part of this whole conversation. Kevin, I want you to leave his mic open, but I also want to talk to Craig Hyde with Rigor. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed looking at you and talking to Kevin a little while ago. That was kind of fun.
Well, I'm honored to have my own name being called when I'm talked to.
So tell us a little bit about your outfit. What are you doing? Who are you doing it for? And I don't know. Let's even ask why.
Sure. So Rigor is a web performance management company. And what that means is we help businesses. Our core market is online retail and finance, and we help those companies, in a nutshell, make their websites faster and operate more efficiently. So break less, load faster. So when you click the button and you go to that site, it works right away, and you don't sit there and have to watch a loading bar.
Now, that's an important thing, right? People don't realize, especially in e-commerce, that the speed of a site means a person may leave the site, right? And milliseconds matter.
It's amazing the research that has been done is really amazing with the data that comes back from it, because obviously we all know that people don't like to wait for things. They don't like to wait in line. They don't like to wait in traffic. And they obviously don't like to wait for their websites to load. But the threshold that people have now is so low. So Google did a study last year, and this was published in the New York Times and made a lot of headway. But for websites that take over half a second to load, they experience fall off due to poor performance.
Half a second.
Yeah, and not only that, but every tenth of a second, one way or the other. So if your website is 10% or a tenth of a second slower, then you lose 1% in sales one way or the other. So the threshold is just crazy how fast people are out of there and hit back and go to the next result in Google.
Right. Remember when we were younger and the internet was dial-up and you'd be like, it would take like an hour to have the photo load up, and you're like, come on. And it's like not worth it. Like, they have to back up.
Exactly. And what's happened is the speeds of the website have gotten so fast that designers and people who implement the website no longer think in terms of how do I minimize this for the speed. They just throw all this stuff on there. You look at a CNN.com and you have all these widgets and all these pictures.
Right.
And the average site today has over – that one page on the average website has 80 files coming from 20 different places.
Wow.
And it has to load in half a second. So the design that is going through – that people are going through when they build these websites – is just different, and they don't account for this. They don't account for performance as much as they used to. So it's a big market, big opportunity for us to kind of go.
But how do you fix that other than like redesigning the website, or do you have to redesign the website?
Most of the time, you don't. There's a lot of little things in there, little nuances that are sort of best practices that we pick up, and it's just change this thing here and there. But we're sort of like we just provide visibility into everything that's going on. So if you think of a secret shopper, when they go to the store, they tell you, hey, this one line is taking too long. You need to open up more lanes, or this person was unfriendly. We have a system that's built of a bunch of robots out in the cloud from all over the world, and they crawl around on websites, and they try and add things to cart and purchase products. And then when things don't work correctly, we have a series of diagnostics, just AI, for lack of a better term, to tell you here's why. It was this plugin, PayPal went down, or whatever third-party component you put on the site, or you took that picture with 10-megapixel camera and you loaded it up, and they have to wait 5 minutes
for the whole thing to load.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, is that a viable marketing strategy? Can you go robot our site and then come to us and say, Lee Stone, I don't know what you guys are thinking, but here's the results from our robot test.
We do that.
Yeah.
So we have something called the Web Performance Grader.
Not quite as bad as the window guy shooting the BB gun into the window, but
you need a new window.
It's approaching the line.
No, hey, we didn't break it. We just found the hole. We have something called the Web Performance Grader. It's webperformancegrader.com. And it enables you to just plug your site in, and it'll do a quick scan of the site and come up with 5 to 10 things that you can do to improve the performance. And one of the marketing avenues we'll benchmark industries and say, hey, you're in the bottom quartile of the whatever vertical it is in e-commerce or for finance. You know, you're in the top 10 out of 100 of the sites that you consider your competition. So we'll go after that.
Is there any things that you see all the time that are the things that slow down a website?
Some of them are the things that I mentioned, just common errors that people make mistakes, or people don't understand the impact, and they'll put gigantic images on the site. And
so what's an optimal size image or number of pixels?
It's just the optimal size for that size. So there's a few ways to optimize it. Instead of just taking a giant image and squishing it down into a little box, just make the image the size of the box.
I know we've done that. I know we have.
Right.
I don't think we do it every time, but I know we've done it because I've watched it take way too long to load, even though it's not that much bigger than the one on the page before, and it's costing me.
It's little stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's a quarter of a second here. They start adding up all these little tenths of a second.
And then one person puts the image, and then part of the problem is there's on these major websites like BestBuy.com, they're customers of ours. They have hundreds of people and different agencies all working on one page. So all those things, it's just a lot of moving parts. And if there's not one central point to look to see what's going on, then nobody really knows what everybody else is doing.
And so, there's some way for them to check in and, I don't know, look at a dashboard or a gauge or what have you, or your people are looking and checking that for an ongoing client and getting back and saying...
Well, so that we have dashboarding tools for the executives so they could see red light, green light, are things working?
That's language I can understand.
Yeah, red light, green light.
So who's buying this? And I guess I want to know who's saying no to this. This has got to be a no-brainer, but I know nothing is. So who's buying it and who's saying no? Or why are they saying no, I guess?
Sure. So we have our core market is small up to near the largest online retailers. Like I said, Best Buy, Home Depot, some of those clients are on the top end that use us. And then we start from anyone who owns their own website, any e-commerce or online retailer that personally manages their own site. Those are kind of our target market. The reason why people wouldn't use us is they're just focused on getting there. So it's obviously first you have to get your site to where it needs to be, and then you can optimize it. Right. So getting those core
So they have to be a little more mature.
They do.
Now, what stage in your business are you in right now?
So we've been around as of last month. We are now 3 years and 1 month to the day. So we started June 1st of 2010. And we spent about a year or so building the technology and sort of figuring out where we were in the space. This was a space that I've been in for a long time, but obviously you have your own unique DNA as a company. And so we've sort of honed that over the course of the past few years. And now it's just go time for us. So we're really looking to ramp up the sales and marketing engine and start piling on the customers. And so we've started to do that.
Now, so you're not really in the startup phase anymore. You're more now a little more mature and you're just you're in growth mode. Now, why'd you choose the Village?
Well, we're getting to be more mature. So that's a daily process. We're not perfect yet. But the Village is just a no-brainer. We actually were – prior to the Village, we were in ATDC in a small environment there. But we just couldn't get the space. It's such a demand for this type of space. There's I don't know. I'm making this number up, but it was like a year-long waiting list to get an official office lease there because there's so many companies, so much demand for this kind of thing. And we were the I think we were the first people in the building. Closing day, we got a text, and we went in there with card tables and started working in an empty office.
How many are you?
There are now – there's 7 full-time.
Wow.
Started as of next week. So we're growing pretty quickly.
So what do you need? You need money? You want some Java developers? Hey,
I know where they hang out.
Hey, we'll take some money. I mean, that's always good.
Are you looking for money? Like formally, or not?
Yeah. What we're really looking for right now is we're searching for customers, and then we're just looking for the right people. We've been very lucky to not suffer from the droughtage of the talent. We have I think the numbers are anywhere from, depending on the role, 50 to 100 applicants per position that we've posted.
Wow.
Per position that's hired, not just posting. So we've had a lot of good luck with the talent around in the past few years. But we're really looking for talented people. Sales, marketing, development, and then just constantly looking for the right connections to bring our product to market.
Now, when you say sales, what does your salesperson do?
Our salesperson owns the whole shebang, so it's soup to nuts.
But they're just going, hey, go to web
performance. Webperformancegrader.com.
Right, just go there. That's where you want everybody to go to, right? That's your lead generator, I would imagine.
It is a start. We do get a lot of inbounds through that. And then it's just spread the word because we are still a small company. We've been around for 3 years, but we were 3 people as of 6 months ago. So we're really just starting to grow, and it's more of an evangelistic type approach. And and versus a big company, you own so much more of the process, where it's from hello to ongoing relationship building.
But if you say you have Best Buy as a client,
we do.
Right. So Best Buy is a huge firm. And
yes.
Then you'll take like a small firm, right, that just has their act together but is selling some stuff online.
Right.
You can't approach the sales of
Same
each
way.
Of those are totally different.
It is, and it's even different depending on which person you talk to in the organization, because one guy just wants to know, it wants to prove it wasn't me who broke it.
Right.
And the other guy wants
it was
to
Bob.
The dashboards. Yeah.
I need something to show you, my boss, that Bob is really bad at his job.
Right, right. Whatever it is, it wasn't me.
So, but the individual, I'm sure that's, those people make decisions like in a snap, right? They see it, they like it, they go, okay, this is a no-brainer here.
It does depend on the organization. It can be a, it's, for the sales on our end can be fairly complex because so many people are involved in it. So many
right.
people are involved in the, that want the data that we get pulled into more complex sales. So it's a pretty dynamic person that we need.
And the role of that person is the chief technology officer, the CIO, sometimes the president?
For us, it can go up to the president in the smaller companies, but it's typically the director of e-commerce or director of technology.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that takes a lot of energy, I would think, to have those. I mean, is your person or persons, they're going to be hitting the networking circuit and you know, doing talks and all that stuff, coming up with thought leadership. I mean, this is a full-time gig here.
It is absolutely a full-time gig, and there's a lot to learn. So you have to talk one day to a CIO and the next day to a developer, and you've got to be able to speak the language. So it's
now your background's engineer, right?
Right.
So you went from engineer to sales?
You had a real job before.
I once had a real job.
But so going from engineer to salesperson, what kind of training is that?
I kind of lucked out in the fact that I was engineer by education and trade and
salesperson by personality.
I could say that I was always better at explaining what was going on than actually doing it. So I got into the technical sales role. So I've been selling, our market's called application performance. So you really have to know the soup to nuts stuff, what's going on underneath. And it was just a kind of a natural transition. So,
but you're hiring for salespeople, is that right? You have candidates, and you're exploring, or you already have made a hire for a sales and marketing genius, or
we have hired 3 sales professionals in the past month or
oh,
2 months.
Oh wow!
Months,
oh, okay,
months,
so you're already busy doing that.
But we'll be growing.
But you're going to be growing.
We're
all right.
Grow.
I want to bring Kevin Sandlin back into this conversation. What advice do you have for them in preparing to get out there and drive? Do you guys know each other before today, by the way?
We've seen each other around, but okay. we were formally introduced today.
So you knew each other, were villagers.
Right.
But any advice, counsel from a completely different perspective, completely different organization? I mean, this has got to be a hard road to hoe. Yeah, if you can sit down and have this conversation, fantastic. You know, but, I mean, I got to believe it's got to be tough to even get – a conversation with the CIO, right? What advice do you have, Kevin? Help him out.
Well, I don't know that I can help him out all that much, but Craig's company has identified a real problem, and you can quantify it when you tell an e-commerce platform or company that they're losing sales because one page is too slow, and you can quantify that. Then the person, the CIO who reports to the CEO, is going to feel that, and they're going to want to change it. So it's a classic problem of a startup: are you selling vitamins or are you selling painkillers? And Craig's definitely selling painkillers because they can identify a piece of pain that is very clear and very prevalent in the market. You can see it. Just go to the website. There's your pain. Hello, tick tock, and you wait there. And if 2 ticks go by, you just lost customers.
So. What do you think of this, Lee? This
No, I think I wouldn't think that's that difficult to sell. I think you have a good strategy in creating this greater site that enables people to see with their eyes. It is what it is. I mean, it's not me trying to pitch you something. You're seeing it with your eyes. It takes this long to load. That's a fact. You can time it yourself, right? And these are some of the reasons why. I mean, that's important data for them to know. I'm surprised that they don't internally just know that.
You would think. But also, sitting next to the computer that's running the site, it's always faster than when you're on the other side of the world. So.
Right, and you know how to navigate it. So you're like, this works for me perfectly. Right, right. What are you talking about? I just hit these 6 buttons. Right. It goes like magic, you know?
And isn't a lot of stuff, what's the right, cached or something? So doesn't it go just a little bit quicker right there if you've been there a whole lot?
Right, kind of
thing.
Everyone's experience is different. So.
Not only that, how quick am I to call attention to something that maybe I had a hand in designing?
Creating, right.
So you're dealing a little bit. I can remember the old days of selling training to the training department. They weren't always crazy about the outside people coming in and making
around.
The sales training a little better.
Right.
You had to. So you got some of those issues. What a fantastic service you guys are.
Oh, thanks. We're working on it. It's been a long road. So
I want to talk talk a little bit more about villager life, though. So you guys have seen each other around. You've met each other formally today. But it sounds like there's a lot of collaboration, a lot of energy.
And just stealing that vitamin painkiller thing is worth it right there.
Cool.
That's worth the trip.
So so tell us more about village life from your perspective.
Well, I've been there since mid-April, and for me, it's been very helpful. I don't work there every day. I work from home a couple days, and there 2 or 3 days a week. But you can always find someone there if you have a problem. All right, you know, go to Karen or go to somebody with it to find out who can help me solve this problem. Or what do I need to do? And as far as the Atlanta technology world, this is a phenomenal cross-section of it. You have everybody from every part of that. So no matter where you are, you come in, there's somebody there who either you can help or they can help you. And that's part of the culture that the village has built is you're there to get your stuff done. You're there to build a successful business. But part of doing that is helping others. And that's part of why I created the pitch meetup that'll start next Friday is to help other small startups perfect their pitch when they go before a customer, when they go before an investor or anybody else. They have to nail that pitch, that 30-second pitch. You only get one shot. So that's part of the culture there that I enjoy most is that if somebody sees me doing something stupid, they have permission to tell me.
I like it.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, Kevin, about your firm, and we'll first do the firm website and then the pitch meetup information.
Sure. It's deductmore.com, no E on the end, deductmor. And we are currently accepting signups for our early beta, which will start next week. And so if you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/deductmore, again, no E. And then the pitch meetup is called Startup BP for batting practice. And you pitch, we call balls and strikes. And that starts next Friday, and it's going to be every Friday right after Startup Chowdown at ATV.
And Craig, website?
Our website is rigor.com, R-I-G-O-R.com. And then you can run, if you just take your own site and plug it into the webperformancegrader.com, you can check it out how you score.
I'm not sure.
I'm afraid.
All right, and what's for lunch on Friday?
Karen, do you do a 4th of July party over there? What's going on? Fireworks from the roof?
Funny enough, you ask. We are actually not doing Startup Chowdown this Friday just because 4th of July is on Thursday, and we are doing a few things on our facilities on Friday. So not this Friday, but it will start back up the next Friday.
And if people want to learn more about the village, what's the website?
AtlantaTechVillage.com. And you can sign up for startup chowdowns, look at any of our events. We have an event page where you can see anything that's going on over the next couple of weeks, as well as information about memberships.
Good stuff. Thank you so much for putting this together. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.